Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The worst case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. That's the grim assessment of the UN-backed expert group, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, which assesses food crises. Against that stark reality, diplomatic pressure is building on Israel, with the UK joining France in planning to recognise a Palestinian state in September unless Israel acts quickly to improve conditions in Gaza. For the latest, I'm joined by foreign correspondent with Channel 4 News, Sukhandar Kermani. Good morning, Sukhandar.
Good morning.
How meaningful is all of this positioning around statehood and recognition of it? Does it just provide Israel with something to object to? Britain, you're legitimising a terrorist state. Or does it do anything to place pressure, do you think, on Israel to lift the food blockade and stop the killing of civilians?
Well, look, I think these are clearly, in some ways, symbolic moves, recognizing Palestinian statehood or announcing the possible recognition of Palestinian statehood. But they are significant and they carry weight because they are something that Israel has objected to for a long time. Israel has long opposed unilateral recognition of Palestinian statehood. Right now, the current government is vehemently opposed to a two-state solution, full stop, in effect. And we've had two different models, really, at the moment of how it's being done. One that we've seen from the French president, Emmanuel Macron, the other week, saying that France will recognise Palestine as a state, as Ireland and other countries have already done, around 140, in fact, in total. The British Prime Minister adopting a different approach, saying that the Palestinian state will be recognised if steps are not taken by Israel to alleviate the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, to agree a ceasefire, as well as other actions, including not annexing the occupied West Bank, for example. So I think that will feed into Israeli calculations. I mean, certainly they are very much alive to mounting international criticism over their conduct in this conflict. We saw that with the fact that Israeli officials have begun allowing a greater number of aid trucks into the Gaza Strip, setting up what they call these humanitarian corridors to facilitate that aid reaching into the Gaza Strip. But so they are alive to that criticism, but ultimately the one power in the world that really has an impact on Israeli calculation is the United States. Okay. And the United States, it, you know, does not seem to be on board with the British and French positions. You know, we previously saw Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, saying, basically echoing Israel's talking points on recognition, saying it's effectively rewarding Hamas, something that, of course, you know, Britain and France and others say is ridiculous.
And to that end, Sukhandar, what's your best information about how much pressing of Donald Trump Keir Starmer was able to do in Scotland in the last couple of days? We got publicly an acknowledgement that people seemed to be hungry in Donald Trump's assessment. I wonder, behind closed doors, did it go a bit further than that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been hard to get a read on exactly how far Keir Starmer pressed President Trump. I mean, it seems that the suggestion is that British officials took some heart from the fact that Trump acknowledged that there was a starvation crisis that is real, and you know, Israel's position, despite allowing somewhat more aid in, is still that there is no starvation crisis, despite the clear realities we can see in front of us and that UN and aid agencies talk about. So I don't think, though, that we're about to see President Trump making any kind of radical new announcements on pressurizing the Israelis. I mean, when the Trump administration came into office in January, they were widely credited with having pushed through the ceasefire that we saw then, with his special envoy Steve Witkoff really reported to have kind of doubled down on pressure of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. Right now, we don't seem to see any of that same kind of pressure, any of that same kind of rhetoric around. President Trump seems to be open to the idea of perhaps even further ramped up Israeli military pressure. And all the American talking points seem to be about frustration with Hamas and their role in not agreeing to the ceasefire right now.
Meanwhile, the food situation gets worse. We have credible reports from UN sources saying that the airdrops have landed in inaccessible areas, also that the trucks arriving by land are not being sent to Hamas, as was being claimed, but are being looted by organised groups in a way that the IDF could possibly prevent. And we have also seen how many people queuing for food have been shot during that supposed pause in military activity. So it would appear that talk of aid delivery is something of a fabrication for the benefit of media consumption and an attempt to deflect international pressure. Is that apparent to the UK government, do you think?
I think certainly everyone was waiting to see how these humanitarian or so-called humanitarian corridors would play out and what the impact would be on the ground. I mean, airdrops, I think everyone recognises, are insufficient and are largely more symbolic than they are.
Maybe you could go even further than that and say that they were a cynical, created-for-TV moment.
Perhaps. I mean, you know, I think critics would certainly say that. I mean, in terms of the number of aid trucks, I'm just looking at kind of right now Israeli government data. They say that yesterday 200 trucks were collected and distributed by the UN and other international organizations. That's still, you know, way below what's needed. Remember, before October the 7th and the start of the conflict, there were over 500 trucks going into Gaza on a daily basis. And of course, needs have massively exploded since then. You can see the images of skeletal children on a daily basis on our social media feeds from Gaza. But you know, when I was in Israel on the occupied West Bank just a couple of weeks ago, and I was speaking to UN officials, and they were telling me that the biggest problems they were facing back then was, as you alluded to, the looting of aid trucks, some of which was done by people who were just desperate and just ordinary Gazans who just, you know, wanted to try and get their hands on a bag of flour to feed their families. Because remember now, a bag of flour costs, a 1 kilogram bag of flour costs around $30, $40, $50 at times. It's just, you know, extortionate. But also because of those prices, there are also either armed gangs or profiteering traders who are also involved in the looting. And it seems that looting is absolutely continuing, even with this slightly increased number of aid trucks coming in. And so, you know, the people in the UN that I'm speaking to say the only solution is to really flood the territory with humanitarian aid, bring down the costs, and then you just basically destroy the business model that any criminal gangs or traders have, because there's so much flour that no one's going to pay these inflated prices, because it's freely available to to everyone, and there's still no sign of that level of aid being allowed in. And as you say, you know, it's a daily occurrence when people, Palestinians who are queuing and trying to attempt to get aid, are reported as being shot and killed. I mean, feeding your family in Gaza has now become, you know, one of the most dangerous things you could venture out to do.
You raised the West Bank there, which is obviously and understandably in the shadow of what is going on in Gaza, fallen somewhat from the headlines. Your own news channel was yesterday reporting a very dramatic story of the murder by an Israeli settler, the apparent murder by an Israeli settler of a Palestinian filmmaker, as an example of what it is that is going on in the West Bank. Can you give me some details on that?
Yes, this was, I mean, there's a place in the occupied West Bank called Masafa Yatta, which has been kind of at the heart of a long-running Israeli attempt to push residents out and by local residents to resist that. It was the subject of an Oscar-winning documentary, No Other Land, you may have seen, a very powerful documentary produced by both an Israeli activist and local in conjunction with Palestinian activists who were living there. It's also, the area is also home to one particularly notorious settler who has been sanctioned by Britain, various other countries, previously sanctioned by the Biden administration, although those sanctions were removed by Trump when he came into office. His name's Yonon Levy. What we saw on Monday was a video of apparently Yonon Levy waving a gun wildly around, firing during some kind of confrontation with Palestinian residents. Reports suggest that he and some associates were trying to destroy water pipes around a Palestinian community. Then they were confronted by those residents. One Palestinian man was shot and killed, and Yonon Levy has been accused of being behind that of his murder. He's been placed under house arrest by Israeli authorities. Of course, you know, human rights groups have long said that settlers in the occupied West Bank are able to act more or less with impunity, and that in the majority of cases when violence is perpetrated against Palestinians, there is no real accountability for that. The victim in this instance, Auda Hatalin, is someone who had helped the filmmakers and taken part in the filming of that documentary, No Other Land. And so the directors of that have been very vocal in talking about what a great loss he is, and also pressing that, you know, for some kind of accountability on this occasion.
So ethnic cleansing on the West Bank, and what anybody with half a brain in their head is calling genocide in the Gaza Strip. Is the UK government, or all governments, doing right by international law when they have recognised, or when anybody says that there is genocide taking place? It does place a legal obligation on governments to try and prevent that genocide by any means at their disposal. Is that responsibility being shirked?
So, of course, I mean, for what it's worth, you know, the Israeli government denies that it's committing genocide. It denies allegations of ethnic cleansing as well. The case at the International Criminal Court of Justice is ongoing as to whether genocide is or is not being committed. But, you know, numerous genocide scholars have said that it is. Interestingly, a number in the last few days, a number of human rights organizations from within Israel, B'Tselem, Physicians for Human Rights Israel, have come out publicly and described events in Gaza as genocide as well. Certainly, you speak to critics of the British government, of people from pro-Palestinian activist groups, and they'll say that no, not enough is being done. Not enough. That often we might see increasingly tough words from officials, but that's not matched by actions. I suppose perhaps the British government would point to this declaration on Palestinian statehood as an example of being increased action, or the threat of action. I mean, some I've seen some analysts, you know, pointing out the slightly uncomfortable, strange wording around the announcement, where the kind of recognition of Palestinian statehood is seen as something of a kind of a threat to wield over the Israelis, rather than the granting of a basic right, as many others would see it, to the Palestinian people. But I can also understand that the British Prime Minister's position was that he was trying to use the prospect of unilateral recognition as a tool to effect change, to help a dire situation on the ground.
And ultimately, what action can you take beyond that when Israel is being bankrolled by the world's superpower. Sukhinder Kamani, foreign correspondent with Channel 4 News, thank you very much for joining us. Coming up, the inner workings of Tesla and the philosophy of its boss Elon Musk exposed in a whistleblower leak.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.